Radio.
Hello there, welcome to the second segment of Labor Law and Human Resources in Focus. I'm speaking with Chuck Krugel today. He is a labor and employment attorney, business person, and HR consultant. He's out of Chicago. He has a law degree and also a master's degree in industrial organizational psychology. He's got a lot to say, so please stay tuned and listen in to the rest of the interview here on Values and Ethics from Living Room to Boardroom.
How are you living your dash? It's that little line between your date of birth and date of death that represents your life. Are you living your life by design or by default? Are you as effective as you'd like to be? Dash coaches uncover what you don't see so you can achieve that effectiveness. They empower people and organizations to optimize their dash. Get your free dash coaching session today. Call 516-677-9111 or visit dashlive.com.
Listen, the world is talking. World Talk Radio.
Hello, well, thank you for staying through the commercial. Let me speak further with Chuck Krugel. Chuck, thank you for your time.
Sure.
So if I were an employer, there might be a kind of a feeling that it's not fair that the government, in that libertarian sense of the word, has a right to tell me what to do with my employees, you know, who I can hire, what questions I can ask, all these details and rules about the workplace, and I might consider it red tape. Is that what some of your clients sometimes feel?
Yeah, and also because it's the sense that they're also funding the government. I mean, there's this push and pull in terms of power and money between, you know, government's funded by our tax dollars, and the employees, it's the employees and the businesses themselves, but the businesses are also paying the employees. So unless the employees were paid, all the workforce was paid directly by government, you know, 100% of the U.S. workforce, then it'd be a different story. But that's not the reality of it.
Hmm.
So yeah, that's what happens with a lot, you know, with a lot of my clients that are small to medium-sized businesses.
And do you think that that there's some of the regulations and the processes that the government, be it federal, state, county, local, put into place, do they hamstring the organization from being able to be, you know, fast on its feet and to make money and adapt to the market and, you know, just basically be free to make money in the best way that it can?
Yes and no. I mean, it's not you can't absolutely say yes, because the laws, some of the laws are well written enough that you don't always need an attorney to interpret them and figure out what's what. And there's And then because of the Internet, the advent of the Internet, there's a lot of good information out there available for free to businesses. On the other hand, a lot of laws are written very vaguely, and then you have to have an attorney because you need to be able to interpret the laws via administrative code, you know, regulations, and then also court cases that interpret the laws. So it depends on what law you're looking at, and it basically depends on what law you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of the biggest questions I get asked is, can I do this relative to some employment practice? Sometimes I even have to go back and start looking, because you have to figure out the fine line between what's legal and illegal.
Mm-hmm. Do the laws sufficiently protect workers here in modern day America, do you think?
I believe the laws sufficiently address most most employment situations or practices, I think the problem becomes, number one, you have the global economy now where we're not just competing, you know, states aren't competing against other states, we're also competing on a statewide or local level against other nations. And I'm seeing this right now in Chicago with our bid for the Olympics. So we're not just competing against LA, we're competing against other cities for the Olympics in Chicago. You also see that relative to there's a lot of push and pull relative to pension funds and how the how businesses are paying out of their funds. You have a lot of poor or legal practices from businesses such as Enron or whatever, where they've basically raided their pension to pay for current business operations or other activities, some of which are illegal, and then you have to rely on the government's or the federal government's Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation to cover that for pennies on the dollar. So the laws, I believe, cover these topics or situations. A lot of it comes down to execution and then how it's looked at or what we're doing on a global level to remain competitive.
And can you make a guess about the future competitiveness of America, or is that just way too vague?
It's vague to an extent, but I've taken some stabs, like even on my own website, by saying that, and I don't have empirical evidence to back this up, by the way, but I'd say that by 2050, private sector unions should be pretty much gone in the U.S., that they should be pretty much out of the private sector because it's just not competitive on a global level. They're trying to organize in other nations. In fact, I heard on your radio show, I heard the interview a couple months ago from the unions, the two representatives were talking about unionization organizing in China. Well, that's not really correct. I mean, or not a really accurate statement.
Well, it looks like we temporarily lost Charles Krugel. We're going to try to get him back on the phone as soon as possible. One of the things that I'm interested in hearing from him is about the profit motive. That's something that corporations are required to pursue, and a lot of small businesses, of course, are purely interested in making profit. I'm wondering if this is consistent or contradictory with the idea that employers should consider ethical standards and compliance in the workplace. So as soon as Chuck is back on the line, I will restate that question. Let me tell you a little bit about Chuck's website, CharlesKrugel, K-R-U-G-E-L, .blogspot.com.
And, Jason Hill?
Hi there.
Yeah, we got cut off.
I was just going over your blog. Do you have a website and a blog, or is your website at blogspot.com?
Well, you could also just go to www.charlesakrugel.com, and it automatically goes to the blog, too. It's the same.
Okay.
The blog is my main website.
All right. Well, that's worth noting because I think I missed the A when I spelled out the website. It's charlesakrugel.blogspot.com.
Or just charlesakrugel.com.
Okay. Well, I'm afraid that the question that you were answering was incomplete, and I'm having a lot of trouble remembering that particular question.
Well, I think what you were asking was is labor and employment law, is that helping the U.S. remain competitive?
Yeah, and I mean, I guess what I'm trying to get at the bottom is, you know, should we be as competitive and as profit-driven as possible as a country? And then, you know, if some workers happen to get hurt in the process, well, that's what happens. We're trying to compete globally. Or is it better to say, you know, our principles of worker protection and fairness are even more important than, let's say, competing with China, who obviously does not have the same level of humane workplace standards that America does, if I'm being clear.
Yeah, you are being clear. First of all, before, did you catch my remark about the Chinese labor unions?
Please repeat it. I heard the word Chinese labor unions, but I think that was the sentence in which you got cut off.
Okay. What I was referring to, what talking about, was in your past labor show, I think the two union reps were talking about labor unions on the advent or rise in China, China's recognized labor unions. Well, that's not completely true because those are state-controlled unions. So it's the state, it's very centralized, it's the state that controls and sanctions the labor unions there. These aren't like, these aren't similar to American labor unions or European labor unions where they're democratically and individually controlled and run. So it's, okay, it's a, they disdain, I mean, I've talked to Chinese businessmen and business people, they disdain the idea of privately owned and run or privately run and elected labor unions. So it's not, it's a completely different dynamic. So, all right, so to say that labor unions are on the rise in China is not exactly true. All right, now, on the global level, America can remain competitive, and the idea of the profit motive, in my mind, is not contradictory or not the opposite of maintaining a safe and productive and maintaining a safe workforce. I mean, in the capitalist society, market-driven economy, capitalist economy, where the profit motive is the whole reason to go into business, basically, to provide for your family to eat, survive, that kind of stuff. And the idea that basically you're investing in your employees and trying to maintain a healthy standard of living for your employees is not doesn't contradict the profit motive. If anything, it should be more motivation to increase profits. It's just, I think the issue becomes, how do you responsibly use or how do you ethically use those profits? Do you end up in a situation where you pay, like Home Depot did, where you pay your CEO a golden parachute of $210 million, or do you try to limit that so, you know, the money's reinvested into the workplace itself, it's given back to the stockholders and the employees, and who, you know, it's the push and pull, who reaps the benefit there. So I think that's how we remain competitive on a world level, and also by raising, by being leaders. You know, we want, we're leaders, maybe not in manufacturing anymore, but at least in ideas, and we're trying to lead by example.
A $210 million golden parachute, please inform me, does that mean that the Home Depot CEO was asked to leave or wanted to leave, and that was the severance pay?
Well, whatever, for whatever reason he left, I believe he was asked to leave, but yeah, that was the severance pay, $210 million.
Goodness gracious. Well, that will certainly cut into your profits.
Yeah, it would cut into a lot of aspects of running a business.
And if you think about, from a training perspective, how much training could you do with your employees for $210 million? I mean, that could be the biggest training budget ever created in a given year. And the employees from Home Depot are obviously missing out on that, whereas the CEO, as brilliant as he or she might have been, that says something about our corporate values, I think.
Yeah, and I would, even as a management side person myself, I would I would raise my eyebrow at that and ask them what were they thinking and what is going on there. I mean, who are these people accountable to? The people who approved it, and the guy walking away with that money,
mm-hmm.
regardless of that he's legally entitled to it, or at least as far as we know right now, he's legally entitled to it. You know, what were they thinking?
Yeah, well, just from a general, kind of a layperson's perspective, I'm not sure that you can say that you even do value either profit or employees if your CEO has a severance package of $210 million. I mean, that neither gets toward employee benefit nor does it get to profit. Obviously, the shareholders are not reaping benefit from that type of severance.
That's a great point. Yeah, it definitely doesn't speak well for the, or doesn't support the notion of profit being the ultimate goal.
And that's probably not the only example of, you know, let's say extremely high severance extremely generous severance packages or exorbitant CEO pay, if you will, or even, you know, employer unethical conduct. I mean, you see a lot of examples out there of things that are going wrong in the workplace that they really don't have anything to do with making sure that it's a good place for employees to work. And it seems like, to me, from a values perspective, you do want to value your employee if you want them to be productive. I mean, you know, if you want to pay your employee minimum wage, no benefits, discriminate against them and make it an unsafe workplace, well, they're not going to help you be very profitable because of all of those deficits that they're bringing to the table and that they're being saddled with. Maybe one does not have to go as far as profit sharing, but it seems like creating a happy, healthy employee is what businesses should be striving for. Do you think I'm being too idealistic with this perspective?
No, because actually what was also running through my mind is that you and I both have backgrounds in psychology and counseling. And if you look at it, you know, this is going to get really esoteric, if you know, but if you look at it from a biological perspective in terms of territoriality, I mean, humans, we're territorial, a territorial species, and we protect our own and our territory. Well, if you look at a business the same way, basically you want to protect that, and what's the best way of protecting that and nurturing it is making sure that everybody who's involved has the highest level or feeling of the highest level of responsibility toward that. Everybody feels territorial about it and feels like they want to nurture it and improve the value of it. So, I mean, to do, you know, you talk about training, like how that $210 million golden parachute could help. And you're talking about, you know, in terms of turning money into, or funneling money into training, creating super employees who feel protective of the business themselves. And then because they feel protective of the business, they're also going to feel protective or they're going to also try to increase profit because they have a direct interest in it.
Mm. If I, as a small business who had been profitable for 3 years in a row, asked you your opinion about creating a profit-sharing plan, would you say that's wise or unwise?
Depends on the business. I mean, you always have to look at how much money you're earning and what the cost is of administrating. You know, there's always administrative costs. So it's the same thing with a benefits plan, a medical plan, whatever. I mean, do you want, you know, a lot of employers talk about having a medical plan, like protecting their employees, but how much would it actually cost to implement something like that? Actually, that's where potentially where a labor union can come into use, is if they offer benefits. You okay. can offset costs. It's almost like using a broker in that respect, or like a professional employer organization, by increasing the number of people involved, because a union represents maybe a larger number of employees.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be one avenue where potentially a union could be helpful.
So at the bottom line, do you think that the profit motive is consistent with the idea that employers should consider ethical standards and compliance in the workplace?
Definitely, yeah. I believe that 100%. It's because you're basically protecting by treating your employees ethically within the confines of the law or within the confines of whatever policies or procedures you implement, because some companies actually implement policies, procedures, whatever, that are sometimes even more restrictive than the law.
Hmm.
And as long as you maintain that, but I also don't believe that businesses should get overly bureaucratic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you make exceptions for your better employees. You treat, generally speaking, better employees get treated better. They get paid more. You know, they get more breaks or perks. So, you know, on the other hand, you don't want to be overly bureaucratic and reliant on procedures, red tape, things like that.
Yeah, interesting. Well, Chuck Krugel, a labor and employment attorney out of Chicago, and available through charlesakrugel.com. I thank you so much for your time today.
Sure, Jason.
I learned a lot about employment law and you know how to blend things like values and workplace ethics with the profit motive, which is definitely a sweet spot for thinking, because you know it's easy for those who purely want profit as though they are running a slave camp, and those on the other side who are very idealistic and, you know, have grandiose views of what society can look like. You know, there has to be a coming together of various viewpoints so that we can have a realistic pursuit of profit, but yet consider employees as the people that they are and to try to make their lives as decent as they deserve based on their work performance. It's kind of all about fairness, you know, fairness toward the employer, not being subjected to unfair lawsuits and unfair regulation by the government, and also fairness, you know, sharing some of the profits with your employees in a fair way and making sure that, that you don't discriminate against them when, in hiring and firing, and that they have a safe place to work, because in a way we're kind of all in this together. So thank you so much for your time, Chuck.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Well, talk with you in 2 weeks here on Values and Ethics from Living Room to Boardroom on World Talk Radio.